and welcome back to the Science Basement spin-off series, Let's Talk About. Today we're going to talk about supervised and being supervised. I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Ileana.
Hello.
And we have a special guest, Sasha Dobrego.
Hi.
Hello, Sasha. How are you doing today?
Oh, great. Today is a good day because most of the snow is melted. So I'm happy about that.
Is it?
No, you don't like snow.
You live
it's
in
really
Finland.
Hard to walk with a pushchair, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I love snow, so I am not that happy that most of the snow is gone. But
I think it's either snow or dry to me. Because otherwise,
right.
it's not good for your shoes, right?
Not good for your shoes, but also not good for your knees, because even though you don't realize it on a slippery, icy ground, it's not very good for the legs. But anyway, that's not our focus today, right?
Yes, let's go back. Otherwise, we're going to get stranded in talking about weather. It's the best icebreaker in the world.
Yes.
But Sasha, how about you introduce yourself first for people who don't know you?
Hi everyone. So I'm a doctoral researcher at the Department of Languages at the University of Helsinki, and I guess I was invited here to the podcast because I have experience in being supervised, in supervision, and also in mentoring and being mentored. I am being supervised just because I'm a doctoral researcher, and I used to have a supervisor from the lab, and I have a supervisor from the Department of Languages. I also supervise groups of students in my course, the experimental laboratory course at the Department of Digital Humanities. I also am a mentor in several programs.
That's lots of things you're doing.
Indeed.
That's academia, right?
Well, yeah. But would you say you prefer more being supervised or supervising? What is like you, which side would you rather choose?
Honestly, now that I'm approaching the end of my PhD studies, I feel like supervision is my thing rather than being supervised, because I already feel like I'm quite independent in what I decide to do for the content of my dissertation. But it's really hard to find what kind of supervisor you are and what kind of person that would fit. So that's a very difficult question, I guess.
I second that because I'm already past of the point of being supervised. Of course, I have my official bosses to whom I report. But as a postdoctoral researcher, I work independent, and I am on the same level with my collaborators. So I don't expect them to guide me or tell me what to do and supervise me. Although I am looking for mentors, like more senior scientists who can mentor me. But as I was saying, and it ties to what you said, Sasa, I find that I had different styles of supervision, which made me realize when I was a student what I liked the most, because I had different supervisors at the different stages. So I could tell what I liked from each, but also in general as a style. But then at the same time, applying that to your, you know, when you become a supervisor, it's not as easy as one might think in advance, because it's also like a dual relationship that you build with the supervisee. So it's not as straightforward to say that's my style and that's how I go.
Yes, definitely. And I really think that when we are being supervised, we have a lot of complaints about our supervisors, like they did wrong in this way and they could have done better and then could have answered the emails. But then when you like do the supervision, actually, you feel like there are so many problems that you can't tackle and you don't really know like what you're doing for the first time most of the time. So it's really interesting how it turns around.
Exactly. I think we usually have these things we would expect our supervisors to do, and we as students can be a little bit demanding when we don't receive the support, and maybe get a little bit offended, like, oh, why didn't I get this advice or this support? But we also need to always keep in mind the business of the supervisors themselves. There's so much attention they can give to a single person, especially when they're leading a group of like 25 or more people. But that said, of course, if they know that they have a big group of 25 or more people, they need to adjust their own supervision style so that people don't really feel alone and left out in this way. But we had this word mentor popping up already a few times, and I'm getting a little bit confused. So what is there a difference then between a supervisor and a mentor?
Yes, definitely. It's different. So when we talk about supervision, we usually talk only about the content of the dissertation or about the research we do. So it's very related to the field that you're in and probably even only within the group that you're in. And most probably there's some money involved most of the time in most of the disciplines, right? So there is this kind of hierarchy that like, can I say this or can I be like this or can I do like that? Because the supervisor is the one who distributes the money within the group, right? But then when we talk about mentorship, we usually never talk about the content of the dissertation. I mean, we can, it's not like off topic, right? But that's not what interests mentor and mentee. What we talk about is career in general and how to navigate around the academic or non-academic world and whether the decisions that you take are kind of right or wrong in terms of reaching some, I don't know, career destination or finding a PhD or something like that. And mentor is someone who has more experience in what you're interested in, and mentor just helps the mentee to kind of guide themselves within the world. And usually there should be no money involved in the matter. So nobody pays anyone, and therefore, there is no hierarchy and they're kind of on the same level, talking openly to each other.
Of course, we have to say at this point that if you are a supervisor to a student or a postdoc or a PhD researcher, or even sometimes postdoctoral researchers at the first couple of years might have someone supervising them, it doesn't mean you're not also a mentor to them. If you could do both jobs, it depends on the relationship you build with your supervisees. But I think because I've done mentoring through a mentoring program that the American Geophysical Union had started. It's called Mentoring 123, if I remember right. I'm sorry if I remember wrong. But also I have noticed that I am much better at mentoring rather than supervising yet, probably because I don't have a very strong supervising experience. I had just a summer interns a couple of times, and that's my only supervising experience of me supervising someone else. But I do tend to put myself all the time in the position of the mentor when with the PhD students in my group and fellow postdocs who are at the very early steps. So when they're applying for funding, I tell them, oh, there is this funding call. Did you know about this? Or, you know, when you apply for this funding call, take care of this and that and be careful to add this and that. Or, oh, you're going to a conference, you know, it's important to go and meet people, find, you know, the strength in you to go and talk to them. So I think these are things that I do also as a mentor. So it's not just to navigate them on career choices per se, but also to give them like this extra boost of confidence and advice that they might need. And as a mentee, one of the best advice I ever got was that you have to have a small community of collaborators, that they are your collaborators. You can always turn to them and they will always be there to help. And so you have to be careful how to choose them, because, yeah.
Is emotional support included in mentorship? Is it mostly just like navigating in the career? Is it still more focused on the career and things within your work?
For me, I would say that in both supervision and mentorship, it's always the initiative of the supervisee or the mentee. So it really depends. I've had mentees that were very self-sufficient and they had their goals and they just wanted to like, okay, which mailing list do I subscribe when I get here? Like very specific questions. And that's great. And I've had mentees that were very sensitive or more like emotionally unstable, and they would need more support. And then sometimes they would write motivational letters, right? Which is always a difficult thing for any academic because there are so many of them. And they would be like, I have no idea what to do. I worth nothing and things like that. And then of course, as a mentor, yeah, you boost them up somehow, you give some kind of emotional support. So I think it's very, very adjustable case by case.
Yeah. Also, I think it depends on the university you are, but sometimes the mentors are also there so that you can even go and tell them, I have this problem with my supervisor, or this and this has happened and it is affecting me. Because in my department here at the University of Helsinki, we have also low threshold contact people where you can go and talk to them about these kind of problems that you might be encountering, that might be anything from conflicts with supervisors to more harassment related issues, but not everywhere that exists. So if I was a mentor to and a student would come and tell me, well, my supervisor doesn't provide me enough support, I would provide the ear they need for listening. And then maybe based on the topic, if I have some experience or some advice to give, I will share that with them. So I think a mentor can be strict, but also it can be a flexible, let's say, position. It's not a real position, but yeah, a role. That's a better term.
Well, and still on the note of the emotional support, maybe it's not that much of a responsibility then of a supervisor compared to the mentor, but I personally would be looking at least for a certain extent of mental connection with my supervisor. It's not just the business, but having like a little bit of a small chit chat or talking about things that interest you, I think will actually enhance your relationships and your work. Because once you're more in sync with each other, then you can also understand each other better and everything you do will be more efficient in a way.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, what do you think students in general mostly look in a supervisor? I have my own experiences from the past, but it's quite a while ago. And I'm interested to see how the scene has changed because you're still on your a doctoral level. So you have more fresh experience on the matter, possibly, or you have heard also from other colleagues about it.
Well, I can say from my experience that most of the people who are approaching the end of their master's studies and kind of looking into the PhD programs, they actually do look into the distinguished professors or like someone who publishes in like top journals, someone who is like very famous, has like 50,000 subscribers on Twitter, something like that. And that's like the general view of a kind of a PhD group that they want to work in. And I feel like it's a huge mistake because that the distinguished professor doesn't always mean like a nice person, a person
or
who
a
will
good
take
supervisor.
Care of you, a good supervisor, right? Quite often it's on the opposite. And especially if the group is like well-established and it's not like a newly organized group. But that's unfortunately what people dream of when they are in their master's programs. And I doubt it is changeable in any way, honestly.
Especially the number of Twitter subscribers. I mean, what kind of measure is this?
Yes. Apparently now in 2023, almost. Apparently it's like very important.
Wow.
Yeah. But no, I can see also that to have been like a motivation also back in the day when I was looking for a PhD group. But it partially because of lack of knowledge, like when you're a master's student, probably, at least in my time, it was very rare that you would be going to conferences, that you would be knowing many people in the field. So there was always the one person who has written the most papers or most famous papers, and you had read them for your own thesis work. And so you kind of have their names readily at hand. And if your master supervisor will tell you, you know, there are all these groups out there, they have open calls for PhDs, not necessarily you know which mailing lists to subscribe for PhD positions. That I discovered more as a postdoc when I started subscribing to mailing lists, and then I was getting all these advertisements for PhD positions. But when I was a master's student, I didn't know. I just knew the top names in the field. And I was like, oh, if I join their group, I will be at the center of the scientific scene on that research topic. So I'm not surprised that this is still the value.
It just sounded like some insider's information. It's like hidden from everyone, like, unless you're subscribed to these mailing lists and then you're one off.
Well, but it is kind of an insider's information because I've been in the business for quite a long time. It's like 6 years since I finished my PhD and then 3 years as a PhD, more or less. So all these years I have insider's information from different places. But it was, as I said, very late when I discovered all these mailing lists, because they are mailing lists from projects or from organizations. You don't know about these things when you're a master's student, unless your supervisor then has told you about them. So for me, for most of the PhD positions I have found as an open calls when I was searching for one, it was by Googling or because my master supervisors told me there's that open call.
Well, what you just mentioned also, that your supervisor tells you about some calls, and this brings another very important aspect of a good supervisor, at least that I consider, is that they will care about your career development as well, that they will help you in some way, like to find a nice place to work after, for example, PhD, and maybe recommend you to other people, introduce you to new contacts during the conferences. This is a very important part of this, because if you want to grow in the field, you need to build your connections.
And, absolutely.
It really helps, especially in the beginning when you're shy and unsure, to feel more relaxed when your supervisor actually assists you in this.
And that's the one of the pitfalls, because if you go for a distinguished scientist who are very busy, as Alexandra said earlier, they might be supervising too many people, because people who are known in the field, they attract more funding, they hire more people, and they don't necessarily have the time to supervise you. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they will provide you with this extra support that you might be needing.
But speaking then of time, how often do you think you should be meeting with your supervisor? And is there like a difference that students would want to meet more often and supervisor less frequently, or the other way? Because I know also some supervisors like meeting almost every week, and then some students complain, but I don't really have anything to present. How does this work? How do you reach this balance?
I really think it should come from a student, and everything should be decided on the show, like before you actually start the work, because it is very easy to go with the flow with the first couple of months and then suddenly remember that you're supposed to have a supervisor, or supervisor remembers about you then suddenly. I mean, it's very, this thing can easily go off roads. So I think that what should be done when you just found your supervisor and have started a PhD, you should sit down with the supervisor and you should do some kind of agreement, which would have something like, we meet this often, I sent you the data or the paper or the draft or whatever 2 days in advance, or like a week in advance, and like I don't read my emails on the weekends, or I don't read my emails overnight, or whatever, like whatever is important to you should be written down there. And this for the supervisor as well. So you shouldn't come with like requirements of what a supervisor should do for you, but you should rather ask like, how do you feel comfortable working? What do you expect from me, right? And then when this is written down, it can be changed throughout your PhD, of course, several times, but like it should work for at least 6 months or so. And then everyone's happy, trust me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I recall like when I was young master student or even at my early PhD years, they used to say that students shouldn't expect supervisors to adapt to their wished supervising style, because supervisors are busy people, they have many students, and they can't change for everyone. So it's more like you learn to adapt to it as a student. So you learn to adapt to your supervisor style. But I agree with you, Sasha, that it is a dual relationship. There's the supervisor on the one side, the supervisor on the other side, and they need to come and meet each other somehow in the middle, because as you said, some students have different needs than others. And so the supervisor shouldn't also put like a hardcore schedule, because that can put pressure on the students, unnecessary pressure to some extent.
And also because it's both parties that are benefiting from this relationship. It's not that a supervisor gives a position and a student is like so privileged to be a part of that group and they need to adjust their entire existence to the supervisor's schedule. No, I mean, a student also brings a lot of benefits to the PI, especially if it's a very hardworking and brilliant one. So I think it's just fair for a supervisor to adjust to a certain extent to the needs of the students as well. But the thing that Sasha was talking about, the written agreement, I think I've heard it before somewhere, but I don't know a single person who did it. Like, how common is this?
Well, I actually did it personally. And I know, yeah, and I know that in some universities, they have started the practice already of doing that, this kind of supervision agreement for PhD researchers. And it's actually very simple. It's a bunch of questions on like a simple survey, like how many times do you want to meet? When do you want me to send the text? And you can add any of the questions that you would like to. So it's not that much of an agreement rather than a discussion and like speaking out what you really want to do. If you don't have the supervision agreement at your faculty, you could also make one. And well, if the supervisor is good, I think he or she would be actually willing to discuss that in advance. And you could say like, hey, I did this form in Google Chrome or something like that, in Google Forms, Google Surveys, and let's fill it out together. I would love to see how this works between us. And this is the moment when you approach the supervisor with this is when you already like each other, right? So when you already had this click and like, hey, I'm interested in the science that you do, and hey, I'm interested in your skills. Right? So we actually want to make it work. It's not like the supervisor sees you for the first time in their life. So in most of the cases, they would be willing to discuss that openly.
I like that idea very much. And I would like also to think that even if it's not officially done at a department, maybe all supervisors to get the message and supervisors to feel confident to probably ask something like that from the supervisors at the beginning, because it will also help resolving conflict later in the future. But do you think it's, because you said like you do it like after you know you have clicked, but sometimes you might start working with someone like who will be your supervisor, like you join the group, you don't really know how the situation between the two of you will be. So is it something to do right at the beginning of the starting of the working relationship, or is it something that should be done maybe after like a month or two, where you have gotten to know each other's styles and you want to then set the hardcore plan of being supervised and supervising someone at the same time?
I think it really depends on the project that you're in. So in some projects, when you start your PhD, you have like a meeting at the first week, and the supervisor tells you like, you need to do this and this and that. And then they start sending you emails like on the weekends and ask for like direct reply or something like this. So some supervisors are throwing you right away into this work. And this is what I think is a red flag there. And you need to discuss it as soon as possible, because it can go really far and then you wouldn't feel confident any longer in like, oh, it's been already 2 months or it's been already 3 months, right? So you need to address this issue right now. And then there are supervisors, like, let's not forget that there are humanities where many people work quite independently from the beginning. There are supervisors that are chill. You know, they're not micromanaging at all. In fact, they show up once per 3 months and be like, are there any news? You know, it's
doing good
in some disciplines. So in this case, you might just take it slow and like address it when you want to address it.
But also in that case, for me, that's a flaw in the supervisor. So if a supervisor like that, that he has a PhD student, appears every once a month and say, what's the updates? And, you know, because the student might not put themselves in a concrete schedule this way, and therefore they might, you know, slow down and taking things easy because they think the supervisor is not going to be there or not, you know, not interested in something immediate. And that can backfire badly for the student in terms of the duration of their studies. Many of them might have become less productive just because of this situation, and that will result in less publications. And in most universities, you need to publish a certain number of papers until you're eligible to defend your PhD. So that might prolong your PhD life, which is always not always a good thing, I may say. So I don't like the supervisors who are just too chill about things. So you have to then set hardcore rules from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, on the one hand side, it allows you to find your own style of work, because if it's not forced on you, then you have all the time in the world to explore whatever fits you best.
Yes.
And maybe you'd be also more free to explore on your own ideas. I know like one supervisor in the neighboring lab who also gives a lot of freedom to the students, and that if they have an idea and of course the funding to support this, then they can actually go ahead and experiment on their own. But yeah, they do also feel a bit that they would wish to have more meetings and more feedback from the supervisor, because they definitely have more experience and it takes time to get the same experience. So the supervisor may provide a shortcut to you getting to something that you might otherwise take months to reach.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And once I attended a leadership course, and I advise every supervisor to attend leadership course and management courses, because they provide feedback that can be applied to anything from companies to managing your research group. And within that, you're managing your PhD students. And there we were learning about the different styles of leadership. So you can lead a group from the front. So you are more of in control and giving advice, like you do this now, you do that now. So you control from, like, let's say on top. Then there is also leading from side to side, that you kind of treat your employees that they have reached a more equalized level with you. So you are exchanging ideas, but then you leave them the liberty to also explore a bit more their own ideas. And then there's also leading from behind. So you make sure that no one is going astray, but at the same time, you leave them the freedom to start working on their own ideas and allowing them to make their own mistakes and going back, reflecting on mistakes or, you know, hiccups that might happen along the way. And if they need help, then you can step in to help. And I think when you're a supervisor, it's kind of nice to follow this pattern, that you have all the leadership styles throughout the different years of the PhD. So at the beginning, none of the PhD students would know what to do, how to do it, what's their program, what's their ideas. They are just exploring. So you need to be like at the front and telling them, yeah, this is the plan. You start with this. Let's do that. And as they progress and they gain knowledge and experience, then you allow them the liberty to explore their own ideas.
And I think taking everything that we've said so far, it's very important to be outspoken with your supervisor. If there's something that is bothering you, you shouldn't be afraid of going and expressing these concerns. And I think if you feel like you can't do that, then there must be something wrong with the relationships at the core as well. So just important to find a person you can sometimes like express openly things that bother you without being afraid.
Yeah, and I think that's very important at the first year of your PhD, because that's when most of the problems are seenable, and they will repeat years after years if you work with the same supervisor, but it will be really hard to address those ones, because you will feel already like so related with all the papers, with all the money, with all the things that you've done together. So this agreement, or this spoken agreement or written agreement, is essentially a prenup. It's like you go out there and you're like, okay, I would be comfortable with this, and they would be comfortable with that. And then if you don't like something, speak out right away while you're not too related yet, because then you will, it's kind of impossible to know very well what kind of person your supervisor is before you actually start working with them. Even though you can ask around in the group and you can Google a lot and things like that, still, like, they open up a little bit later. So it's important to speak out right away.
And I guess also important to remember that still, even if you are tied by some papers and data, if you feel that this is abusive for you, and if you don't feel like this is the right place, I think people need to feel more free to let it go. But basically your health is more important, and sometimes you will actually save more time by leaving the group and starting a new project in a more healthy environment than sticking to this old and very toxic relationship.
Absolutely. And this can be like a whole episode on its own.
And it will be.
Yes. Because it's, many people are ashamed to say, I gave up my PhD and I went to another group, but it shouldn't be like that. But it's not the main focus right now. I wanted to touch a little bit on what you said, Anastasia, earlier, that you have to feel confident to express your opinion if you're unhappy with something going on with your supervisor. And I totally agree with that. But I also understand that it's not just about the person, like the student or the supervisee, building the confidence. It's also that the universities should foster this kind of system where if you don't feel too confident to directly speak with the supervisor, because maybe the supervisor is not a good human being, and it can happen that you have tried to talk to them before, but you saw that you hit a wall or it turned a bit unpleasant. And I strongly encourage universities and departments to have a system that will help resolve conflicts between supervisors and supervisees, because sometimes if we think it's hard to talk to the supervisor, it's not only that just we are shy. That's another story. If you're shy, you need to build the confidence. But if you're not shy, but you know that talking to a supervisor leads to nothing or it doesn't take you anywhere, then we need to protect all the students with respect to that, I believe.
Yeah, and I think that's what should be said at orientation events that are there for the PhD students, because often this is not spelled out at all. And in the university's intranets, you really cannot find this information when you've just started your PhD. And people should know that they have a right to change the supervisors in case it doesn't work. And you would be surprised how many supervisors are totally fine with that. Totally fine. So I've had like 3 students who have changed their supervisors in different universities, and they were trying to approach this problem for a year, each of them. And when they have finally talked with the supervisor, they were like, oh yeah, of course, like whatever fits you best, from different fields. And they were totally shocked of how cool they were. So yeah. You really shouldn't think like this is
maybe
something.
Maybe I was wrong.
You really should, like, yeah, you really should like try to speak about it. And like, I think it would be really wonderful if students had an awareness of that they could do that.
I think they might, I mean, we are all told yes, you can do this or do this and that. And advice is good in theory, but hard in practice. We always, you have heard this expression, it's commonly used. And it's a true thing. I offer advice to many people. I do not keep myself. So it's a hard thing to build the confidence, but it is important to build it. I totally understand. And it also to, because through talking with the supervisors or supervisors talking with supervisees, you realize that maybe some things in your head were idealized or your expectations might have been disappointed. Or you were disappointed because your supervisor didn't meet your expectations, but then at the same time, there's the expectations and then there's the reality. And we also need to remember that as supervisees are humans, so are supervisors. And there might be a period of time where they are flooded with work. Supervisors have to apply for funding. They have a lot of committees and meetings to attend to, and they might be busy, so they might not be there. So it is important that you acknowledge that, but also don't let that dictate your own PhD. Just also talk to them if you need more time with them, for example, or if you need something else. I don't know what are there apart from that the supervisors are humans.
Groundbreaking. What?
Yes.
It's so important, but it is what students do forget. You know, it's so important to remember that supervisor might just be having a bad day. Like, honestly, they might have not slept well this night. And that's all. That's the pure reason for them to, like, ignore you today or weren't too nice at the meeting or something. So, yeah, you really should remember that.
Yeah, and only by talking with them, you realize that, that was the reason. It's not about me. Or
I want to say that supervisors can also have their own insecurities. So a lot of things, maybe some behavioral patterns that they might have, maybe also explained by their own insecurity. So of course, if it's very bothersome, as we already established, like just don't bother with this, but also try to approach this with understanding that, yeah, as Eliana just said, we're all humans.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, I think we've made pretty much a full circle with the things we've been discussing. So I don't want to repeat ourselves too much. But Sasha, what do you think, in your opinion, what would be the top one thing you would recommend people when searching for a supervisor and choosing a good supervisor for themselves?
Top one thing would be talk to the group. Talk to the project, talk to other students that the supervisor supervises. And nowadays with all the open information, probably you can find them. Write them an email or anything, ask them, are they happy? Are they talking a lot? Are they required to do a lot of things that they wouldn't want to? And this should be pretty much then understandable whether you would want to work with this person or not. I think this would be my top tip.
And maybe they wouldn't be able to, like, you might not be able to get too much information because, as you mentioned just before, that some things pop out as you work. But I agree that it can give you a nice general idea. Usually, if the supervisor is abusive or has bad habits, they will actually tell you this. If it's a very private conversation, they might mention this. Of course, not in front of him, but yeah.
Yeah, I think when you message students and you ask for some general opinion of the supervisor, there is always a but. Like, she's nice and all, etc., and a great researcher, but. So look for this but and see what this but is about. And then if it's fine for you and not a but for you, go for it. If this is something that you are concerned about, then probably think whether this is the right person for you.
And then when you're actually having a supervisor, I'm sorry, I'm extended these top one. What would be the top one thing you would recommend people to follow? Listen, what do you think is the key element of the relationship between the supervisor and the supervisee?
Okay, honestly, talking, being open about things, even if your supervisor doesn't seem like a very talking and open about things person, you can be. And it's fine saying that you're having a bad day or that you're having a bad week and that you haven't slept much. It's completely fine and it's much better than disappearing and not replying to emails. Just think about it. Think about how you can be open and how you can express your feelings even when you're not really looking at the supervisor as like your personal mentor.
Okay, Eliana, what's your top one?
So I think my top one was taken from Sasha, because exactly when you were asking the question, that's what I thought. But no, it's an excellent point, Sasha. Thank you. So it gives me an opportunity to add an extra thing, and that would be to know thyself. Because if you sit down with yourself to discuss what are your needs, then you can more easily then convey them to your supervisor. Because if you do not really know what kind of needs you have as a supervisee, then it will be very hard to establish the line of supervision with your supervisor. So yeah, and if at some point your needs change, I agree with Sasa, it's important to talk. But what I wanted to say is like a message to the supervisors more than the supervisees, and that is take a leadership and a management course. I know I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but these are not skills that come with experience, because your first PhD student then will be screwed. And I'm sorry for using that vocabulary, but in a sense, if you do not try yourself already from the beginning to improve and advance your knowledge on the practice of supervising, then you discredit your early employees. So yeah, that's my message to the supervisors.
Thank you. Well, as for myself, all of the above, and I'll finish it at that. I think you said it already so well. And to me, these are also the key points to bring up. So I think at this, thank you very much, Sasha, for joining.
Thank you for inviting.
Thank you, Eliana, for being my lovely co-host.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, the listeners, for tuning in, and expect more interesting and controversial topics from us.
Ooh. Yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the episode.
Yes, follow us on the social media and submit your feedbacks. We'd love to hear from you.
And check also the episodes on the main series.
Yes.
If you have not already.
If you have not already, you better.
You better.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.